There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1003, July 31st, 2023. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say, ain't no sunshine when he's gone from pole position. The beat goes on to the max. Laurent Mekies has left the building in Maranello, and heads are rolling in Enstone. We shall explain. Gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max impossible to stop. From sixth, he won with a 20-second lead. I mean, that is obscene. It's unbelievable, but it's exciting to witness. I want to say happy birthday to El Machismo de España. Alpine reshuffling the deck, so to speak. And LCH still not too happy with the W14. He wants to make sure everybody knows about that. And quickly, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the Verstappen Domination Show. I mean, it's unstoppable.
Yes, sir. And like you said, we are enjoying it, watching history in the making. Checo checks out at the start, but Mac checks in as the winner at the end. What else is new? I have to say that Miss Connie Francis is back in the studios cutting a new single, and hopefully you will be the first purchaser of this 45. The song is called Who's Lucky Now? And Mr. Oscar Piastri goes from hero to zero in 24 hours. Prancing Horse makes it to the podium, and how refreshing was that? But Mr. Leclerc keeps hearing Roberta Flack in the back of his mind every time the Scuderia advises of the gap and pace to Max, killing me softly with his song. I mean, when will this music stop for Red Bull, Max, and let's not forget the GP2 engine?
I mean, it could go on until 2026, folks, until we get the new monstrosity engine that's going to be loud and obnoxious, taking us back to nostalgia. But in the meantime, I don't know, it's going to be tough to do, but I think a few teams showed, the McLaren, when they showed their card in Silverstone, and then Hungary, it showed that there's catching up to do. There is a secret. There's a path. It's just very, very hard. That fork in the road is very hard to find, folks. And there's a reason for that, because when you find it, this is what you get. The whole pot of gold to yourself. So we're in the V era. They could have pictures of Churchill throwing the V, and they know it's not for peace, it's for Verstappen.
Exactly. And, you know, I agree with you. This will continue till the wholesale changes in 2026. And I've already said this, and I'll say it one more time. By then, we are looking at Max with 5 championships and 70-plus Grand Prix wins. This is just an incredible thing we are seeing. But that's the way it goes. You know, put the best driver in the best car, and he goes to the races. Shall we do a quickie on Colly, which took place on Friday, sir?
Yes, Pedro is still employed, so put him to work.
Yes, you know, there's this shootout. I mean, it's hard to figure out what is going on a Friday. Anyway, slippery when wet. Max on pole by 0.8 second over Prince of Prancing Horse Charles Leclerc and his own teammate Sergio Perez. 0.8 second, man, over the next guy. That is pretty pathetic for the competition. Then came the law, 5 places grid penalty for the Dutch master for his 5th gearbox of the season. Meaning pole position went to driver who took his first Grand Prix win here in 2019, which would be Monsieur Charles Leclerc. Do you remember he went 2 races in a row, Spa and Monza?
Yeah. Oh yes. Those are the ones you want to win. You know, if you're going to win, it was awesome.
And then, you know what happened when some teams complained and FIA started investigating? There was a secret agreement. And then Max made that very famous comment in Austin when they were not competitive. He said, that's what happens when you cheat. But that's the way it goes sometimes. Slings and arrows in motor racing come from every which way. Now, Max was a staggering 1.6 seconds faster than Ombre in 9th place, which would be like the 5th row. And that was your Dios, Senor Fernando Alonso, and his teammate Lance Stroll sharing 5th row with him. 4th in qualifying was car number 44, your favorite, LCH, Lewis Carl Hamilton. And 5th was car number 55, Smooth Operator. Both McLarens made it to Q3. Oscar Piastri qualified 6th, just ahead of Lando Norris. Out in misery loves company, meaning Q1, both Williams drivers, Alexander Albon and Logan Sargeant. So was Chinese driver Zhou Guanyu, or Guanyu Zhou, however you want to hear his name. And of course, Nico Hülkenberg. But biggest surprise was Daniel Ricciardo. The Honey Badger honeymoon lasted only 1 race. But the second half will confirm if his 2014 mojo is back and he will have a second rodeo with Red Bull next season or 2025. Anything surprise you apart from Max's pace in the qualifying, sir?
No, it was the standard procedure. I like listening to the radio messages. Obviously, Max is completely out of control, but he's so dominating. He really is the quarterback of this team. And the way he talks to his coaches and stuff is terrifically entertaining.
Yes, that it is. And looks like he has met his match in terms of communication. He's not dealing with some guy say, oh, I made a mistake, I'm so sorry. He comes back, just listen, follow instructions. No, we don't need to do that. But, you know, he's a very hot-headed, supremely talented driver. If one of these days he wants to do something that's contrary to the team instructions, Max is going to do that. And as Mark Webber said about Sebastian Vettel, as usual, he will have support of you-know-who. Anyway, moving on to the sprint race, this was play misty for me. Misty, dusty, or bone dry, we all know who will be first at the end of the last lap. I think we had 5 or 6 formation laps behind the safety car. Oscar Piastri got his 15 minutes of fame in leading the sprint race before the inevitable. Based on his junior career success and how quickly he is up to speed against his teammate, I think Mr. Webber's new protege will make his mark for the next 15 years. This kid is very, very talented. You have to be if you can win Hapidos, GP2 or Formula 2 in your first season, which he did. And so did Lewis and Charles and George Russell. Okay, now I'm sure there will be debate on this. Okay, I have to say that Mr. Brown, you got 2 lovely driving talents and hopefully they will stay with him. And the car will get more and more competitive. Now, as far as the 5-second penalty on LCH is concerned, the stewards are turning Formula One into Mother Teresa Motorsport Series. Lovey-dovey every lap. Chai and samosa for all drivers at 4 p.m. local time. Now, I say there is a difference between hard and fast racing, as in Brazil 2021 and our favorite Dijon Prenois 1979, compared to boneheaded dangerous driving in which a driver is Maradonized. This is the big problem in watching Formula One live these days. From free practice one to the checkered flag, you just wonder who will be given grapes of wrath by the stewards. Formula One is motor racing. This is not a military parade in Pyongyang or Potsdam where every step has to be measured and disciplined. I say, leave the kids alone. Now, Mr. Rogers, did you like the 5-second penalty on Lewis?
I loved it.
You're not the only one.
No, I could care less. I didn't think he deserved it. It was a racing incident. But Perez, they have to make those side pods a little tougher. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you know, it's the thing, you watch a race. A race is not, first lap is not even completed. And of course, Spa is a long track. You see a banner, you know, lap one incident between car this and car that under investigation. I mean, they've not even completed a lap. I mean, I don't know, man. It's just, they're taking the fun out of motor racing. You know, what we call motor racing, the Dijon-Prenois man-to-man battle like Senna and Prost and Senna and Mansell and Lewis and Max in 2021. That's what we want. Shall we move on to the big show on Sunday, the Belgian Grand Prix?
Yes, Mr. Earnhardt.
Yes, sir. You know, I have to say, the package that Dr. Marco and Christian Horner have in car number 33, both in terms of driving and technical talent, is good enough to win regardless of starting position. I think Max will win starting from pit lane as long as there is a full course safety car period. Because, you know, if you have a 30-second lead on him, just because he spun or team screwed up and there is a safety car and everybody bunches up, the party's over. Sunday's performance was no surprise for me. Only surprise was it took 16 laps before he was in the lead. By lap 6, Max was third after saying ta-ta to Hamilton with ease. And 3 laps later, he was saying buenos dias to Checo Perez after passing Charles Leclerc. Once he was in second, it was just a matter of how soon he will pass Sergio Perez. Like wine, Verstappen has aged very well with time. No need to push and shove and barge ahead, a la Seb in Mexico some years ago. I'm sure you remember that start.
Indeed.
The whole Red Bull package around Max is firing on all cylinders. Pit stops are perfect. The crew is not looking for tires when Max is in the pits. And Mr. Horner once borrowed a line from the host of F1 Weekly and called Lewis a lucky boy. There is luck involved in any success. Max is lucky he does not have Lewis as teammate, and you may disagree on that, but next one you will certainly agree. Max is lucky he does not have Alonso as teammate. Do you concur?
Absolutely. And those two guys would never have a teammate like Verstappen. Verstappen is clearly a number one wherever he goes, and I'm sure that's in his El Contracto.
Yes, and you know, even Dr. Marco said the same thing, that the only two drivers who can run with him are Lewis. He basically said they are, you know, the old guys. But, you know, it's amazing how talented all these three drivers are. It's very, very impressive. But you have to work with what you have. Good times are like bad times. They don't last forever. A couple of champions on the grid, I think we just talked about them today, can verify that. As they used to say at Arthur Anderson, numbers don't lie. In the case of Max, these are audited and certified true by a global audience. And let's just take a look at this wonderful thing that's going for him. 3rd consecutive win at Spa. 8 wins in a row. He can equal Sebastian Vettel's record of 9 consecutive wins by winning his home Grand Prix at the end of this month. He is the only winner at the revised Dutch seaside track. What are the chances of somebody beating Max at Zandvoort? You tell me.
Not in a billion years. But you got to give it to Max. I mean, he's blasting Formula One out of the water. He's going home to Zandvoort in front of his people. I mean, this is it, you know. He's getting the big Dutch treat. I'm happy for him. Because once that Honda turns to a Ford, the party's over.
Yes. Now he has 10 wins from 12 races so far this season. Make that 11 from 13 races if you also include his win in the season finale last year. Now look at this man. Total wins 45. He will be passing Prost's record of 51 before the season is over. Not bad for Jos's 25-year-old little runaway. In the championship, which is what this business is all about, Max is leading his teammate 314 to 189 points halfway through the season. Unbelievable. The 125-point gap means 5 wins in a row for Checo and 5 DNFs in a row for Max will allow Checo to be equal on points. And you know what happens when you beat Max in one race. He gets really pissed off and comes in to qualify, you know, 9-10 faster than you. So if Checo wins 3 races in a row, Max is going to be a towering inferno, I think. The way things are going, the only driver who can beat Max is Max himself, and the only team that can beat Red Bull is Red Bull. I will be very surprised if Perez can get more than 1 win in the second half of the season. The real question is, in a season of 20-plus races, will Red Bull manage a Don Shula Miami Dolphins immaculate season? Time will tell. Their sponsor Tag Heuer is ticking. And Mr. Rogers, will you be happy to see such a season of total Uber annihilation and domination?
Sure I will. And it's happening right before our eyes. And it's exciting, but we all know it's going to end. I mean, Mercedes ended when the rules changed and they had a good run. And now it's Red Bull's turn. And what irks Toto the most and Mercedes is these people make a soft drink. They don't build cars for a living. So when you're Mercedes and you're being whooped by Red Bull, it's just mind-blowing. But that motor, but it's, he knows it's not all motor in this particular case. He knows it's that Adrian Newey guy. What a crazy designer he will go down as. But yes, Adrian Newey is responsible for all this, basically.
Well, it's a team effort, you know. It takes all these things to make it happen. But it's a tremendous thing going for them. And like you said, you know, suck it up and enjoy. Now, in looking at racing history, there have been a couple of seasons where all the Grand Prix races were won by a single team, like Alfa Romeo in 1950 and Ferrari in 1952. But they don't get the credit as they did not win all the championship races during the season, because back in the day, 1950 to 1960, the Indy 500 was part of the World Championship. Do you think they will win all races?
Yes, but I mean, you have to have, once again, some luck, reliability. With the global warming, which obviously does not affect Belgium, you never know what's going to happen with some of these races, with the rain. We'll see. Pretty soon we'll have the rain guards on the cars, and that should be a lot of laughs. Something could happen. The problem is the numbers are really stacking up for our friend Verstappen. And eventually, it gives. Something happens, and there you have it. Fernando gets the win, and everybody's happy.
Well, you know, what will be interesting, if there is a kablamo with, let's say, 30 laps to go or halfway through the race, oh boy, and let's just say Checo is not having a good day, then it will be interesting to see, will it be Ferrari, will it be Lewis, will it be George, will it be Machismo? You never know. And a strange thing can happen. You know, hey, if there's rain, late race rain or something, Nico Hülkenberg can get his first podium on the top step of the podium, which would be very, very nice. Okay, sir, moving on. Let's talk about Omri, who started and finished second, Senor Sergio Perez. There is a video on YouTube in which Max is doing an impression of his teammate and Checo standing by him. Take a listen.
My name is Checo Perez. I like to sleep a lot. I drive a car.
And that's what Christian Horner wanted Perez to do. Just drive the car. You know that song, Who's Gonna Drive You Home? Or Who's Gonna Put You in Second Place? It'll be your teammate. Second successive podium for him. He has scored points in all races except Monaco, and is the only other driver apart from Max to win races, and you have to give him credit for that, for winning in Saudi Arabia and Azerbaijan, but he has not won a race since April. On a positive note for Perez, he is still second in the championship with 189 points, now 40 points ahead of third place Nando, Mr. Alonso. I think once in a blue moon, Checo will beat Max, but most of the time, Max will shine on Perez like the sun in Phoenix, Arizona in summertime. Dry heat, baby. Take it. In a perfect world, Barrichello would be world champion if there was no Schumacher. Bottas will be world champion if there was no Lewis Hamilton. Dr. Marco described Checo's situation best when he said, Perez has woken up from F1 World Championship dream. I say numero dos behind Max is no shame. What say you on the Checo situation, senor?
There's nothing he can do. He's up against a phenomenon. You don't beat phenomenons. You just relax, collect your paycheck, and shine that number two, because that number two is paying you damn good.
I heard he's being paid $10 million because he's bringing a lot of money from Carlos Slim's, Telmex operation.
Exactly. So him and Carlos can hang out and feel really good about being a number two.
Yes. And get sponsorship from Avis. That will really make it look cool. Number two and proud of it. Now we move to third step of the podium. Man who started from pole position. The prancing horse jockey, Monsieur Charles Leclerc. It was at Spa in 2019 he stood on the top step of the podium for the first time in his Formula One career. Sunday he had no chance to repeat that feat under normal circumstances. Charles is now fifth in the championship with 99 points. This was his third podium of the season after Azerbaijan and Austria. He has become the 21st century hunted fox of Scuderia Ferrari, like Jackie Iggs and Chris Amon before him. I just don't see him winning a championship in a red car. What say you, amigo?
It's looking that way. It didn't look that way at the beginning, like when he started winning races with Ferrari, but it's all fizzled away. They would really have to turn it around by next season. But with all the rule changes, it's going to be a struggle. When do you stop focusing on this car and the next car? Will Leclerc replace Hamilton at Mercedes, and will Mercedes have another great season? Once again, timing and counting your lucky charms.
Yeah, but you know one problem that Charles Leclerc has, and also Lewis Hamilton has right now. Tomorrow, if they have the best package, Carlos Sainz wants to be world champion, and he's going to take points from Leclerc more than Checo will ever from Max, and I do not see Carlos Sainz as a guy who's going to listen to team orders, let your teammate win a race. I don't think that's going to happen. And same is the case at Mercedes. I mean, last year, George was looking very good, and he is very good. I think if they give that engine some German oomph, and all of a sudden he's half a second, the car is faster than Red Bull, I think George will be a huge problem for Lewis, and Lewis will be a huge problem for George in taking the championship mantle from Max. But we will see. I think we are a couple of seasons away from getting to this wonderful stage of somebody rattling the cage of Max and Red Bull. Okay, speaking of winning championship, we come to your favorite driver, LCH, Lewis Hamilton. He finished fourth and got the fastest lap on the final lap. Oh, that was so impressive, thanks to the last-minute pit stop. Lewis has four podiums so far this season. He is fourth in the championship, 148 points. Now, only 1 point behind his BFF, Fernando Alonso. And of course, misery loves company. Nando was right behind him in fifth. George Russell was sixth. He is also sixth in the championship with 99 points. Now, Georgie boy, last year was star of the Mercedes team, scoring their only victory in Brazil and sending fake signals that LCH was beyond his sell-by date. But the old man down the Stephen H. Road has shown that he has unfinished business in Formula One, and he is not calling Martin Baker and getting an ejection seat installed in his Mercedes anytime soon. Seventh, Lando Norris. The McLarens looked very competitive past two races, and their stock closed at 52-week high after Hungarian Grand Prix. But the bubble burst in the Ardennes Forest. Lando's teammate Oscar Piastri was out on the opening lap after argy-bargy with Carlos Sainz, who was able to continue but then had to retire later in the race. Lando was unable to get a third successive podium and finished 1 minute 13 seconds behind the race winner. I mean, with all that improvement, he's still 1 minute 13 seconds behind. So, go back, Jack, and do it again. 8th, Ocon, the only Alpine in the points. The pass he made on the outside of Yuki Tsunoda on lap 38 was classic. Did you like that pass, Mr. Rogers?
Indeed I did. Loved it.
Absolutely. That was clean. No trading paint or anything. And I think it really surprised the head out of Yuki. Lance Stroll in 9th meant both Aston Martins were in the points. And we are talking job security here for the young man. 10th, Tsunoda collected the final point. On Sunday, he had Ricciardo's number, who could only finish 16th. I don't know what happened there, but it has to be with the car. Yuki has 3 points in the championship, all from 10th place finishes in 3 races. The point in Belgium was the first in 8 races since Baku. Now let's look at the Constructors' Championship, and the story is the same. One-sided as in the Drivers' Championship. Red Bull at the top, 503 points. Nobody has even crossed 300 or 400 points. Mercedes is second with 247 points. Wow. And this is halfway through the season, not at tail end. Aston Martin third, 196 points. Ferrari fourth, 191, and McLaren completes top 503. At one time, McLaren was trying to compete with Aston Martin, but they have a huge gap right now, but things can turn around pretty quickly. Now, every team has scored a point or two on the driver front. Among the current drivers on the grid, Logan Sargeant and Daniel Ricciardo are pointless. The next race is the Dutch Grand Prix on August 27th. Final comments for you, Mr. Rogers. Any smarty pants comment, or which you normally do on Logan Sargeant?
Well, you know, Logan is doing the best he can with a crappy car. I know you think he needs a chance, and I'm gonna roll with it. I don't see anything exciting from the guy, but listen, enjoy your stay. At least he's not crashing and causing safety cars. But I enjoyed the race. First of all, it's Spa. What's not to love? And I like the mixture of weather, cloudy, sun. It was a beautiful weekend. The sprint thing is a little annoying and nobody even knows what to call it. Even Piastri, you know, he goes, so what is this? You know, P2 in the sprint race. Does it count? Does it mean anything at all? And whatever. I mean, it's a few points, so quit your bitching. But Spa is always wonderful. And I'm looking forward to this summer break so we can relax a little bit at F1 Weekly, but continue our F1 Weekly status.
Absolutely, sir. And you know, having been to Spa once with members of F1 Weekly Familia, Monza is incredible. Silverstone is the birthplace of Formula One. And having just now come back from the Austrian track, Red Bull Ring, you cannot do Formula One without these tracks. I mean, if you look at what's going on with Vegas, that they're going to put boards and shine bright lights into these restaurants unless they pay, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 per head. I mean, this is viciousness at its very best. And we don't need that in Formula One, do we, Mr. Rogers?
No, we want a loving, more inclusive, more family-like Formula One experience. And on that note, Nasser, so we'll be back after this brief message. And now for our bonus interview during the break. It's going to be, yes, George Russell, the man himself, right after he won the Formula 2 championship in a dominant fashion. And this was originally played on podcast 777. Enjoy.
Okay, folks, I'm here with George Russell. George, good to meet you again. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. And yourself?
Very good, sir, thank you. Congratulations on a mega season in Formula 2 and your arrival in Formula 1. Where do we go from here?
Thank you very much. As it currently stands, I am finishing off a season as reserve driver for Mercedes. I still have to obviously clinch the title in Formula 2. Many people are talking like I've already won the championship, but I still have to do the job in Abu Dhabi. So, and then when the flag falls in Abu Dhabi, I will be fully focused with Williams.
That season has been very impressive for you. You've won a lot of races. I was expecting a battle royale between you and fellow Brit, Mr. Lando Norris. Are you surprised at how things have turned out for you?
I think a lot of people were not expecting a battle. I think they were expecting Lando to run away with the championship. So I was very looking forward to this season, racing him. There was a lot of talk surrounding Lando, and it was just a win-win situation for me. There was less pressure on my shoulders, more pressure on his shoulders, and I had a fantastic relationship with ART team, and I knew that we could do some great things together in 2018.
Okay. Did you ever race against Lando in karting?
Yes, we raced each other for 1 year in 2009. I was in my last year of cadets, and he was in his first or second year. So we were racing each other, but not actually battling at the time.
Okay. Now, before the F2 season started, was there any requirement from Toto in terms of performance and result, or is he a very friendly wolf?
He's definitely a friendly wolf at points, but he's very... you know, he really motivates it and gets everybody working for the same goal. Last year in GP3, I had set targets. It was very, very clear, very simple. Go out, win the championship, avoid making silly mistakes, interact well with the team. Whereas for this season in Formula 2, as there was a new car, it was difficult to put a target on it, and ART had just been off the back of two difficult seasons in Formula 2, GP2. So they said they would decide, or just judge as the season progressed.
Now, you mentioned GP3, you won the championship in your rookie season, very good and impressive. Compare the GP3 car and with the Formula 2 car, and also the depth of competition in both series.
To be honest, I think GP3 and Formula 2 is two very similar and very good cars. Formula 2 is literally better, very slightly better in all areas. Slightly faster, slightly more grip, better tyres. So a Formula 2 is basically a big GP3 car, in my opinion. And obviously the depth of talent this year in Formula 2, I think it's been huge. I think there's always been great talent in Formula 2, GP2, but I don't think there's been as many drivers as there has been this year capable of winning races on their day. You know, in my opinion, there are a good 12 to 15 drivers all capable of winning races on their good day, so I think the competition was very tough.
You mentioned you're with ART, a chap named Lewis Hamilton also raced with them. Did you test with other teams before deciding on them, or when you're in the part of the Mercedes program, who makes the decision which team to go with?
Who made that decision, I'm not exactly sure. But for GP3, it was absolutely clear ART were the team to be with. After my season in GP3, I was very keen to continue that relationship with ART. I had built a great foundation with the team, and again, for us, that was a clear choice to continue with them.
Okay. We see you in Mercedes garage during F1 races. You know, when people normally don't get to Formula 1, they go to IndyCars, DTM. In your case, it's the reverse. You gave up on DTM to get a ride in F1. Tell us a little bit about that background.
Yes, pretty much as you said, I was in Formula 3, and I had the opportunity from BMW to test their car, and that went extremely well. And off the back of that, I got offered a factory contract to be a full-time race driver the following year. And for me at that time, Formula 1 was not on the radar. I had no connections. I was 17 years old at the time. This contract arrived and I was over the moon and I was, you know, days away from signing when the phone rang from Mercedes, and I took the risk. It was not the contract wasn't on the table to start with. It was an option for 1 year, and I took the risk to turn down a factory contract and a career for life almost in motorsport for a risk for Mercedes to take me or not. So it was a risk, high risk, high reward.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you may not remember this, but some years ago we met in Vegas at the SCUSA karting event. What was your impression of the American karting scene?
I really enjoyed the SCUSA event. Obviously, there was a huge amount of drivers. I think there was a grid of 65. Things are very different over there, but I really enjoyed it. We were all under one huge tent where about 40 carts were underneath it, whereas in Europe you'd only have a tent of about 5 to 10 carts. So I really enjoyed the atmosphere there, and I really want to go back one day.
Now, they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Did you take some stories you can share with us?
No, I was only 2011 and 12, so I would have been 13 and 14, so definitely no stories. Just a great experience and a great atmosphere in Vegas.
Okay, I'll catch up with you after your second trip there. Okay, they call racing a dog-eat-dog world. Among the drivers you have been racing against, have you developed any friendships off the track where you guys hang out together?
I have a very good relationship with Alex Albon. We used to live in the same city, so we spend quite a lot of time together playing golf. I used to go around his house for dinner quite a few times, and we've raced each other for a number of years now. So yeah, I'd say Alex Albon is the closest racing friendship I've grown to.
You are from King's Lynn. Have you ever run into Martin Brundle at the local Tesco or Starbucks?
No, so I'm born in King's Lynn. I only lived there for 1 year, so I never actually bumped into him. But I'm sure I'll be referred to the King's Lynn and Martin Brundle comments for years to come.
Okay. Now, next year you make your Formula One debut. Team, you're with Williams, going through a very tough time. What are your expectations?
I'm extremely motivated and excited for next season. I think it was clear to me when I was meeting the Williams team how much passion and how much talent there is for Formula One, from their engineers to the designers, just to everybody within the factory. They've obviously had a very tough season this year, but I really believe that there will be a fresh start next year, and we can really push forward and get Williams back to where they belong and fighting at the front of the midfield. In terms of an actual target, I think our goals will be to maximise every weekend. If the car's only capable of finishing 12th, bring it home in 12th. If it's capable of 4th, bring it home in 4th. And on top of that, develop as quick as possible and quicker than the others.
Well, I wish you all the best, and given your background, I'm sure success is not too far for you in Formula One. Question I have next is, apart from Silverstone, is there a track you would most want to win in a Formula One car?
I would like to win in a Formula One car, is that?
Your first win, but I'm trying to find.
My first win, okay. No, Silverstone is my favourite circuit. This one stands out, I think. Probably the Monaco Grand Prix. Other than Silverstone, if I had to choose a Grand Prix to win, I think with all of the history and just Monaco itself, that would be a fantastic one to win.
And how good are you as a race car driver in the rain?
I've always gone very well in the rain. So I don't want to big myself up or be cocky, but yeah, generally the performance has been good in the rain.
And final question, looking back at your racing career so far, was there a season that stands out for you where you developed most as a racing driver?
2018.
This season?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think the Formula 2 car and the Pirelli tyres are not an easy combination to maximise. And I felt like from the start of the year, I learned a huge amount from the first race in Bahrain. And I learned a lot of things about myself, also how to deal with the team and the atmosphere within when things aren't going perfect. And I felt like I just learned a huge amount throughout this year, and I'm really putting that into force of the second half of this year, and I think it's really paying off.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Well, Mr. Rogers, as we have seen, heads and globe keeps on spinning at Alpine in Enstone. Team principal Otmar Szafnauer and sporting director Ellen Permain will leave the team after the Belgian Grand Prix, according to the team announcement. Chief technical officer Pat Fry, who used to work at Ferrari also, has also left, and Williams has already confirmed he is joining them. I am not sure if there is a gardening leave period involved here. American man from Detroit, Mr. Otmar Szafnauer, joined Alpine last year after working for the only Pope at Racing Point. Alain Permain was with the team in 1988 when it was known as Benetton, and just to give an idea how long that was, their drivers were Alessandro Nannini and Belgian Thierry Boutsen. What I like about this man is apparently he refused to go along with the team's plan for lap 13 of the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix. Need I say more? According to the team's expected PC press release, this is with mutual agreement. Simple translation is, resign or we fire you. Nothing new in corporate world. Alpine Motorsports Vice President Bruno Famat, who used to be with Peugeot Sports Car Program, will assume the role of interim team principal, with Julien Roos, the director of Alpine's Academy, becoming interim sporting director. The Renault charade of three senior members of the team departing on same day is pretty amazing. I have heard of two, Flavio Briatore and Pat Simmons, departing on the same 5:30 plane together, but three is a new one. I just hope they don't bring in auto industry expert Mr. John Howard to run their F1 program. He was in charge of Toyota F1 program. Need I say more? Sir, this is your home team, French team. You have any thoughts on this or any scoop?
I have no scoop, but Alain Prost has said it, that it starts at the top and they're a bunch of morons, incompetent, naive, fools. And he's shattered because France, Renault, La Belle France, it's a little weird. We don't know what's going on, and I don't know. I've always said that Renault might not come back, but we'll see what happens. Alpine has big plans. They want to come to America. So let's just say that these guys are the ones to watch.
Yeah, that used to be their slogan, and I think the American market watched them go from here. Anyway, moving on to Formula 2, Oliver Behrmann, Ollie Behrmann as they call him, is a face going places. He took third pole position of his rookie season. This 18-year-old English lad is special talent. Three pole positions in his first F2 season compares very well with zero pole position in two seasons for the 2020 Formula 2 champion, Mick Schumacher. Last year he was third in Formula 3 in his rookie season, and in 2021, he won both the German and Italian Formula 4 championships. The future is so bright, he may need some shades. Good thing is, he is in the Ferrari Driver Academy, and the Scuderia already has Ray-Ban as one of the sponsors. Saturday, we had the sprint race, first win of the season for Enzo Fittipaldi. Early race leader Jahan Dharuwala had to retire from the race after his headdress came off and it was dropped on the track, so that was kind of strange. Dutch driver Richard Verschuur, or Richard Verschuur, was second, and Frenchman Theo Pourchaire third. Then came the law. Verschuur lost his second place after he was disqualified on a technical breach. Sunday feature race. Jack Doohan started 11th on the grid, and after 25 laps was the winner. His Papito Mick was there, and he was totally elated. And this is fifth win in the series for Doohan. Pourchaire was second, and Enzo Fittipaldi was again on the podium, this time in third. And you know, I've mentioned to you going to the Las Vegas Scusa event in what was 2012 or something, when Max was there, Charles Leclerc, Lance Stroll, George Russell was there, Jack Doohan was also there. Amazing how these people have come up on the international scene now. In the championship, Mr. Rogers, congratulations to you. Your fellow Francais, Theo Pourchaire, is the new leader with 168 points. Frederik Vesti from Denmark is second on 156, and third is Ayumu Iwasa on 134 points. Now we go to the baby sister of Formula 3. Jose Maria Marti, second pole of the season for the Spanish driver. Saturday sprint race was a joke. Only one racing lap completed. Winner was Nicola Todd Manage, Brazilian Caio Collet. And this is how racing goes, man. When Caio Collet was in karting, Nicola Todd was still managing him, and he was being touted and promoted as the next Senna. And he comes from the same town, Sao Paulo. But he's, I think, in like second or third year at this level of racing. So he tried his best. Sunday feature race, first win for Taylor Bernard. Aussie made Christian Mansell was second, with Russian racer Nikita Bedrin third. And I'm sure this guy, Nikita Bedrin, is racing with a license from some other country, but he is from Russia. Formula 3 championship, Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto still leads with 144 points over Paul Ayron on 106 points, and Paul Ayron is from Estonia. Sebastian Montoya is 15th in the championship with 37 points. I am curious to see how long Red Bull and Dr. Marco will keep Mini Montoya under their wings. Now, the season finale will be at Monza, along with the Italian Grand Prix in September. And now, Mr. Rogers, we present our new feature, Historical Mondial. Spa, the spirit of red water, two of the greatest tracks in the history of Grand Prix motor racing, are located less than 100 miles apart. One is the Green Hell in the Eifel Mountains of Deutschland über alles. The other is in the Ardennes Forest, Spa-Francorchamps. History of this track goes back 100 years. What started out as a classic European street circuit, going through towns of Spa, Malmedy, and famous for Eau Rouge and Master King, and the actual bus stop chicane, is today one of the best Formula One racing tracks, rivaled only by Suzuka. The very first Belgian Grand Prix at Spa in 1925 was won by Antonio Ascari in an Alfa Romeo. His son Alberto would win at Spa also in 1952 and 1953. In 1939, the race was won by Mercedes driver Herman Lang. I met this gentleman in 1986 at Laguna Seca, and Mr. Rogers, I could never ever imagine I would see, let alone meet a driver who raced against Tasio Nuvolari and Bernd Rosemeyer. And many years later after that, it was at the same track that I crossed paths with the legend of podcasting. But we did not meet that day. That was Clark Rogers. Wow. It was round 5 of the 7 championship races in the inaugural 1950 Formula One season. After 35 laps of the circuit, I think the original circuit was like 9 miles long. This race took over 2 hours and 47 minutes. The winner was Juan Manuel Fangio in his Alfa Romeo. In seventh place was French driver Pierre Levé. In 1955, he would crash his Mercedes with horrible consequences at Le Mans. In 1956, English driver Peter Collins took his first Grand Prix win, driving for Enzo. In 1962, Scotsman Jim Clark took his first win in a Lotus, only team he ever drove for in Formula One. He would win at Spa the next 3 years also. In 1967, Dan Gurney drove his own maiden Santa Ana, California Eagle to victory. The following year, Bruce McLaren won at Spa in his own machine. Ayrton Senna won at Spa in 1985 for Lotus. He would take four successive wins from 1988 to 1991 with McLaren. And 1991 is the year in which Michael Schumacher showed up at Spa, all bubbled up in his beautiful green 7-Up Jordan. EJ is still Benny and hisses that Schumacher left after a one-night stand. But that's what happens when you don't book a hotel room and the man has to stay in a youth hostel. Schumacher would go on to be the most successful driver at Spa, winning 6 times. In the 2000 race, he was Zontard for the win by Mika Hakkinen, one of the great passes in the history of Grand Prix major racing. Lewis Hamilton has the most pole positions at Spa, 6. And of course, you know, with good you have the bad. Now let's take a look at the dark side of the Spa moon. In 1960 at Spa, two British drivers lost their lives during the Belgian Grand Prix, Chris Bristow and Alan Stacey. It was his crash in 1966 that prompted Jackie Stewart to go on his safety crusade. Supremely talented Stefan Beloff from Germany lost his life at Spa in 1985 during a sports car race. In recent years, we've had tragedies in Formula 2 and Formula Regional. French driver Antoine Hubert was killed in 2019 during a Formula 2 race in which American driver Juan Manuel Correa was seriously injured. And in July of this year, Dutch teenager Delano Ventoff lost his life in a similar accident in a Formula Regional Europe race. Mr. Rogers, what is your most important memories of Spa? Of course, you were there once upon a time.
Yes, I was there 25 years ago this year, 1998, Schumacher, David Coulthard, rain, chaos, accidents, awesome stuff. Loved every minute of it, Nasser.
Yes, and now some Vegas news. Shaquille O'Neal and David Beckham will host the Sports Illustrated Las Vegas Grand Prix Hospitality Package. Club SI is set to host a 3-day package for Formula One fans. Listen to this. Formula One fans, I'd like to meet them, worth $7,000. The ticket will include access to the hospitality suite, which overlooks the racetrack from just after turn 12 through to turn 14 on the iconic Las Vegas trip. I have a feeling with what they are trying to do with charging the businesses along the track, I can see some sort of a nasty lawsuit brewing, and they'll try to get an injunction, and then of course some money will exchange and lawyers will talk and text and it will be resolved. But we don't want this thing to go out of control. Now, the $7,000 package, Lance Stroll can find this kind of small change in the glove box of his Bugatti Chiron, which he probably got as his birthday present when he turned 16. Daddy also gave him a Billy Idol CD. And I knew everything. Yes, it's interesting. Now, the Department of Justice is conducting, this is interesting, Department of Justice is conducting an antitrust investigation into Live Nation, which also owns Ticketmaster. It's basically sort of about, they're doing pretty much the same thing. They're not going to sell this artist tickets, and they're going to do this. Money does interesting things to people. And sir, you mentioned about Alain Prost. So today's famous last words come from him. And he was shown the door at Renault by Laurent Rossi. And so now that Laurent Rossi, well, he has not been shown the door, but he has just been put somewhere else as in charge of special project. Mr. Prost said, and I quote, "Laurent Rossi thinks he can overcome his incompetence by his arrogance," end quote. Well said. Which brings us to Musical Mondial as Mr. Don Henley enters the Palatial Studios. Thank you for listening and please enjoy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.